The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 4.5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 30th of April, the last day of April. I hope you're all very well indeed, and you're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. Over the next 3 hours, we have the usual mix of covering the top stories, the big issues locally and beyond, some great conversation with people in our local community, and your comments to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. Now give us a call. Excuse me, give us a call on 07491 25000. If you prefer to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, of course, we're live on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, if you're at home, on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, across our Facebook pages and on the X platform. And you can also click Watch Live on our website as well. The Fintan Valley Voice is out this morning. A local councillor who has been on the housing list for the past 3 years has expressed frustration over the slow pace of housing provision. Speaking at the special plenary meeting of Donegal County Council on Monday at County House Lifford, Councillor Dakota Neek-Minimum said, it's something that I feel very strongly about, and it comes down to my own situation and the situation of people that are my age and what they're facing at the minute in this country or in this county and all over Ireland. And I think we're speaking to Dakota, Councillor McMinimum, a little later on in the programme. On to the Nationals now, and Mike Gain, a story, a disappearance that I'm sure you've been following, and if you haven't, you might. The investigation into the disappearance of Kerry farmer Michael Gain has been upgraded to a homicide now, that's according to Gardaí. 56-year-old Mr. Gain, known as Mike, has been missing from his farm since March 20th. In an update last night, Gardaí said that in view of all information they had gathered so far, they had upgraded their investigation to one of homicide. Michael Gain was reported missing from his home near Kenmare, County Kerry, on Friday, March 21st, 2025, and was last seen in Kenmare town on Thursday, March 20th, 2025, the force said. They added that so far, investigating Gardaí have undertaken 320 formal inquiries, taken nearly 130 witness statements, reviewed around 2,200 hours of CCTV and dashcam footage, and conducted extensive searches. And I do hope for the family's sake that this investigation progresses, but just the language and stuff around it feels very much like cases that often end up being long-term murder cases or murder inquiries. They are seeking people who have come forward with information but may have more information to come forward again. They're calling on, they believe there are people that know what's happened and they want them to come forward. And it's just the phraseology feels very much like often cases that end up being long-term murder investigations. But we hope for all concerned that if he has been murdered, that whomever is responsible is brought to justice as soon as possible. The Gardaí went on to say that based on the entirety of the information available to the investigation team at Killarney Garda Station, on Garda Síochána can confirm today that this missing person investigation has now been reclassified as a homicide investigation, and a formal criminal investigation has now commenced, a Garda spokesperson said yesterday. And this means there are extra tools available to Garda Síochána as part of their investigation compared to if it's a missing persons. We'll go to the Irish Times now. And chief executives of commercial state bodies are in line for significant pay increases after the government signalled it would update rules to allow a market rate to be paid to senior executives. Cabinet agreed yesterday to implement recommendations made by the Senior Posts Remuneration Committee, which would lead to pay reviews and possible salary increases worth tens of thousands of euro for chief executives of almost 30 commercial state bodies, such as bodies including RTE and Dublin Bus. It comes against a backdrop of sustained criticism from the opposition of government plans to set up a new housing activation office. not a commercial state body, as well as their expectation. NAMA chief Brendan McDonough would keep his €430,000 annual salary if chosen to lead. And as I said on the show yesterday, the thing is though, how do you gauge his success or failures? We don't do that in this country very much, do we? Sinn Féin's Gerry Adams has been in court. Former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams had his reputation as a peacemaker unfairly attacked by a TV programme which alleged he had ordered the murder of a spy in Donegal, the High Court has been told. The Belfast-born politician took to the stand on the opening day of his defamation action against the BBC, in which he denies authorising the IRA to kill Dennis Donaldson. Mr. Donaldson, you'll remember, was shot dead at his cottage in Donegal in 2006, months after he admitted his 20-year role as a police and MI5 agent. Opening the case, Mr. Adams' barrister, Tom Hogan, told the jury, "Many people say many things about Gerry Adams, and he may have sued before, but over time he has let matters go, usually no legal advice, but he wasn't willing to let this matter pass. Mr. Adams is seeking damages for BBC Spotlight documentary Spy in the IRA, broadcast on September 20th, 2016, and an article on the BBC website the following day headed, Gerry Adams sanctioned Dennis Donaldson's killing," which is a remarkable claim to make in a BBC documentary about someone who is alive. And you would imagine the BBC has their own legal experts, and I presume they have access to outside legal advice if they needed. For them to, such an accusation, for them to clear that for broadcast and publication, really, really quite remarkable. And we shall see over the course what defence they offer, because that could be really quite interesting too. An interesting one in the Sun today. When I say interesting, one that needs to be highlighted, because I think when people hear this or are reminded of it, they're shocked. Rape victim Hazel Behan insists it is criminal abusers can use their victims' counselling notes in court cases. This is the part that really irks me. So someone is the victim of an assault. They go to counselling to try and get through that. And it's supposed to be a personal space. I would have thought it to be a personal, private space whereby one can tease out every aspect of what happened to them or how they're dealing with it or what have you. And those notes can be used then as a defence in any court case, which is really quite remarkable, I think. People Before Profit TD Ruth Coppinger yesterday presented a bill in the Dáil in a bid to outlaw therapy notes being deployed by defendants in gender-based violence trials. Coppinger is calling for fellow TDs to row in behind the bill and pile pressure on Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan to end this misogynistic practice, as it's described, and keep counselling confidential. I mean, is there any of you out there who thinks that those counselling notes should form part of a, or should be able to form part of a defence? Or would you be like me a little bit thinking, I didn't even know they could do that, and the fact that they could is terrible. A vulnerable teenage boy has been sentenced to 8 years detention for the attempted murder of a Defence Forces priest whom he stabbed after he was exposed to radical Islamist ideas online. The now 17-year-old, who cannot be identified due to his age, wanted to kill a Defence Forces member when he came upon Army Chaplain Father Paul Murphy, 52. This was at Benmore Barracks in Galway in 2024 last year. Do you remember this case? He was stabbed in his car, wasn't he? Delivering sentence yesterday afternoon, Mr. Justice Paul McDermott at the Central Criminal Court said, The internet is a dangerous place for impressionable teenagers who become easy prey to malign groups spreading their poison. The judge said the defendant, a teenager with no previous convictions who had never before come to the attention of Gardaí, has distorted thinking about Islam, did not come from the local community, but from sources online, in particular the ISIS terror group. And this is what you kind of do see in these types of attacks, that there often isn't the usual indicators that you might see, you know, a history of violence or the violence incidents, interaction with the Gardaí. What you see is a person, a young person, they can be old, but in this case 17, 16, radicalised online and then go out to kill someone. And it's very hard to predict. You can't control the internet. You can't control who has access to it. But obviously, you know, you have to be of a mind to be influenced and then go out and act on it. I presume it's, I imagine, unfortunately, it's probably not the last of these types of instances that we will see. I know Father Paul Murphy was very, very forgiving, more than most would be, of that young person and his actions. And finally, this is a story that on the face of it you might think doesn't affect us, but in fact it does. And this is coming from the Garda Representative Association conference. The Garda unit that investigates fatal road smashes has fewer than half the number of officers the organisation's own roads policing experts recommend it's emerged. Now, it's not just fatal collisions, by the way. Collisions where there's potentially life-altering injuries, they have to go to those as well, but it's not included in the article, or at least in the headline, but just so we all know. The annual conference of the Garda Representative Association, which represents some 11,200 members of the force, also heard that the specialist officers are having to drive all over the country on jobs, just one Garda being sent from Tipperary to North Donegal. Now, that's unfortunate for the Guard, and clearly, obviously, our thoughts are with anyone who's involved in a serious or fatal road traffic collision. But it does mean that roads are being closed for longer than they might, particularly here in Donegal. Garda Chris O'Mara, who is an FCI based in Tipperary, said he was the only expert available in the entire country at the time to deal with a fatal crash, and was sent from his home base to North Donegal, a journey of more than 300 kilometres. The collision that occurred at 10 o'clock on the Friday night, and it was Sunday morning, 7:30, I think, by the time I arrived at the scene. So that, if you were the people involved or you were looking to get to the bottom of that situation, this is a crash that happened in Donegal at 10 o'clock on a Friday night. And that scene, how compromised might it have been with weather or whatever it might be? He didn't get on site until Sunday morning. And as a result, the road was closed for 42 hours as well. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we had the recent collision in Inishowen where the road was closed for quite some time. A woman seriously injured, not fatally injured, but seriously injured and removed to Letterkenny University Hospital. And we wish her a speedy recovery. But that road, I wonder, was that road closed for as long as it was because of... the lack of staff. They've only got 11, and I think the recommendation is they should have at least 24. 0866 20 5000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Yesterday we heard from those involved in a counter-protest taking place in Letterkenny at the weekend on Saturday. A little later on in the show, we'll hear from one of the organisers of the protest. Now, more motorcyclists have died at this point in the year than in the last 2 years, the Road Safety Authority revealed during the launch of a new safety appeal. Eivind Toomey is Senior Communications Lead with the Road Safety Authority and joins me on the programme now. Good morning to you. Have we any understanding as to why this might be the case?
Yeah, I suppose, look, we would analyse these things quite a lot, and, you know, speed definitely is a factor. And like all road collisions, that there's a number of different factors. It could be, you know, speed or distraction, or it could be road conditions. Almost 50% of the data from the our researchers have gone through the hospital data from 2019 to 2023 of the serious injuries that have come that would have been gone into hospital, and 50% of those were from single vehicles. So there was no other vehicle involved in the collision, and the age group typically is 15 to 34 year old males. The issue, I think, with the motorcyclists is they are a vulnerable road user in that they have a lack of protection. Mm. They don't have the protective shell that we would have in a car, let's say. So there is that, you know.
The figures that you talk of there are really quite telling. And I think this is really useful, because often we talk about fatalities, and of course we're going to do that, but it doesn't tell the whole story, because there are many instances that we don't hear about. And in that period you talked of, from 2019 to 2023, 1,556 motorists were hospitalised following road traffic collisions, 921 of which were recorded as seriously injured. And I presume amongst that, you know, there's many life-altering, life-changing injuries as well. You know, figures that we don't normally get access to.
Yeah, Greg, those figures are specifically motorcyclists, not motorists. They are. And I suppose one of the, like the guards would have certain data as well, but not all particularly single vehicles would. The guards would be alerted or brought on the scene or so on. So their figure is just a little bit lower than ours would be, because we've actually got the hospital data. So yeah, a third of those have sustained critically serious injuries, high probability of long-term consequences. So yeah, 30% have lower limb injuries, 17% had chest, and 15% had head injuries. One in four of those 1,500 people that were motorcyclists who were hospitalized needed transfer to another hospital, and the average stay in hospital was 2 weeks long. So I suppose that just gives you a picture of the types of injuries that are being sustained. And you know, in our recent road safety campaign for this week, I suppose we're highlighting that at this time of year it's peak motorcycling time, the longer evenings, better weather, people are just dusting the bike down and just getting out on the road, and there are typically more motorcyclists on the road at this time of year. And then as well as that, next week, there's a big race in the north of Ireland called the Northwest 200, and that's for motorcyclists, and there's due to be about 90,000 people attending that, so they'll be coming from all over Ireland and abroad, so there'll be more motorcyclists on the road. And I suppose one of the main things is just for all motor road users to take the time, assess the road and anticipate potential hazards, because you know a risk area, particularly for motorcyclists in collisions with cars, are junctions and areas of high traffic flow where they might not have taken an extra look just to see did anything come. Mm-hmm. You know, that typically the bikes are smaller, they are probably move a bit faster. So just taking that extra look to make sure that your the road is clear to go.
Yeah, and I suppose too, it's likely in some cases that motorbikes are coming out of the shed for the first time in quite some time. Maybe they've sat on the same part of the tire for 6 months or what have you. I would imagine, I've never owned a motorbike, but I'd imagine it's particularly important given the fact that, you know, such a little part of the bike is actually in contact with the road, that you ensure, you know, your tires are not just the thread, but they aren't damaged, you know, and check other elements of the bike for safety.
Absolutely. And I think that's with all vehicles, is just, you know, maintaining your vehicle, because really it is, you know, it's what's going to keep you as safe as possible. So, and reduce your risks of being in a collision. So tire safety is hugely important. And just ensuring everything, it's as well maintained and in good enough nick as it possibly can be. And I suppose for motorcyclists as well, just when we look at the injuries with, you know, lower limbs at 30%, you know, wearing the protective clothing such as boots, trousers, helmets, obviously, but all of those that can try and mitigate any risks. But you know, we have featured two people within our release, one whose father was killed from I think a distracted driver who drove on the wrong side of the road, and her father, a motorcyclist, had done nothing wrong. He was driving quite slowly, waiting for a friend to catch up behind him, and he died on the side of the road tragically. And another man, Miles O'Brien from Mayo, spoke to us. He is paralyzed from his breastbone down because of a collision 2 years ago, where he came off his bike on a bend and he landed on a rock, so that in a moment his life has changed. He spent most of last year in hospital rehabilitating, and still is rehabilitating. But you know, I suppose It's just there's very little room for error.
Yeah, and just a particular vulnerability. Okay, as we head into the long weekend and with the sport and events that are upcoming and what have you, we have to all take extra care. Okay, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye bye. That's saving to me. Everyone's an individual. I can say, though, I don't think I've ever overtaken a motorbike or never felt I needed to have to. Have I been overtaken by motorbikes? Yes, really quite significantly. Right, lots of you texted in yesterday in relation to our conversation about the protest coming up in Letterkenny on Saturday. I would like to think that I'm a free thinker, and I hope people are as well. The first text on the top of the pile here: Highland can condemn all it wants, but the people marching on Saturday would no longer be silenced on this issue, which is someone who's been influenced, I think, to the blinded opinion that all media are of a certain mindset. You won't get another radio show or another radio show that actually platforms where it's respectful and what have you, varying opinions on this. I'm not being defensive, but you just wonder, is that person text from Cork or something where they don't even listen? Mary says, I live in Letterkenny, and as a woman, I'm afraid of the type of people landing in busloads into our town on Saturday. I've seen videos of people in Dublin giving Nazi salutes, shouting go home and intimidating people. My thoughts are with any person of colour living locally this weekend. They must feel terrified. But again, to be fair, obviously, if people misbehave, that is going to be amplified, whether it's one type of protest or another. It's not necessarily reflective of all of those that are going to be attending. Greg, people are going for a peaceful protest, but if a few idiots cause an issue, the whole protest will be labelled, as we've seen over and over again. Another, it's a pity those bringing in busloads for Saturday's march do not do the same for protests at Letterkenny Hospital. Greg, the radar system that's being proposed for our so-called defence system is being supported by US and Israel, who are the manufacturers of this system and part of getting us into NATO. Morning, Greg. I've tried to voice my concerns about too many asylum seekers coming into our area, but they've been ignored. Our councillors are not listening. The people have no choice but to march. Thank you. Right, well, just before I go to a break on our next guest, there is a concern that too many people are coming into too many different areas, and it's not about necessarily just because people might be of a different race. It's the numbers, a lot of young men and so on and so forth. So I had a look through there's a planning process called a Section 5, right, whereby basically it is if you want to do something to your property or retain something, you want to get a planning exemption. So it's called a Section 5. And there has been quite a lot of Section 5s submitted to Donegal County Council as it relates to IPAS centres. So these are centres for IPAS. So just to be fair, as I say, I in the show, I always do my research. So I'll give you a list of some of the active Section 5s in relation to IPAS centres across Donegal, if you wish. Finn Valley House, Castle Finn. Bunbeg House, Bunbeg. Clachanmore, Kilmacrenan. Deelside, Lifford. Marine View, Bundoran. Key Road, Dunlow. McClure's House, Letterkenny. Remelton Road, Letterkenny. Lahey. High Road, Letterkenny. Glenleary, Remelton. Fortwell, Letterkenny, and Farley House in Letterkenny. So Letterkenny highly featured there. These are active, either pending decisions from the council or a decision has been given as to whether or not these buildings can be used for IPAS accommodation. Now, this doesn't mean they're not going ahead. It just means the council has said that they're not exempt from planning. So Finview House, the council said it wasn't exempt from planning. I couldn't find a result as it relates to Bunbeg. In Kilmacrenan, Clachanmore, that's not exempt from planning. Deelside and Lifford, not exempt. Marine View, Bundoran, not exempt. Key Road, Dunlow, not exempt. McClure's House, Letterkenny, not exempt. Remelton Road, Letterkenny, not exempt. Lahey, not exempt. High Road, Letterkenny, exempt. Glenleary, Remelton, I couldn't find the decision in relation to that. Fortwell, Letterkenny, it's exempt. Farley House, Letterkenny, not exempt. So there, I believe you can apply for planning and continue with your plans, or you can appeal to Ombud Pleanála. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And there was another two that I just wasn't sure about of applications for exemptions to planning for IPAS centres. So, and they're all over the place. As I say, Castlefin, Bunbeg, Lifford, Dunlow, Bundoor and Ballantra's in there as well, though I couldn't get any further detail in relation to that Ballantra and South Donegal. So, you know, there are people looking on at that and maybe aren't aware that it's happening. Maybe they are aware that it's happening in their own area. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, by the way. I'm just bringing the information. Now, what it does appear to be is the council is taking a firm enough line as to whether or not a situation is or isn't exempt from planning. It doesn't mean, though, it can't planning can't be applied for. And it doesn't mean that it can't be appealed to en bord plenale. But it is also, I suppose, interesting because there is an element of a business beside this in that it's a small number of people and businesses that are actually making these applications. So I don't know how that works. If you're a business down the country, how you identify these properties and then start going through the process. But it's not like, in most cases, it's not like I had a house and I go, right, I think, you know, I can do this. It's businesses in many cases. In fact, as far as I could determine, in all cases. And there's one business that's pretty prolific in relation to this. So that is the information. You can think it's great, you can think it's wrong or whatever, but as I say, I think it's important that everyone knows what's going on all over the place or in their own area. So I thought I'd bring that info to you because it's been mentioned a couple of times and I wanted to check it out myself. Right, okay. We're going to be talking about housing with Councillor Dakota Nick-Menimum after these. Okay, one of the advantages, I suppose, of having different people, different sex, different ages and different life scenarios elected onto the Donegal County Council is that I suppose it gives different insights into it. So we're going to get the insight now from Councillor Dakota Nick-Menimum. Good morning to you, Councillor. Thanks for your time today.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Right, you're in a situation, aren't you, whereby, you know, you've got a lived experience of a situation, but you're also elected onto a council that has some influence in this area. And you were talking about it at a recent meeting. Do you want to sort of outline why this is important to you? Obviously, it's to represent other people as well, but how you have such an insight into this as much as you want to talk about your own situation.
So I am 25, nearly 26 now. I've been on the housing wait list for coming up to 3 years now this year. It's just, it's very hard for my generation because at our age, like I have one child at home, and I just know that it's going to be a long time before I get any form of social housing from the council. It's very difficult at the minute. We know rents are sky high. You're looking at $1,000 a month, regardless of where you are. And it's just very difficult at the minute. There's just so much going on. We didn't have any houses being built for so long. Now that they've started being built, it's, the waiting lists are just huge. They're enormous. And it's going to be a long time to get through that.
From your time within the council, do you believe there's anything the local authority can be doing more of, or is this a central government situation?
It's definitely a central government issue because, you know, a lot of the funding comes down from them, essentially. But I think one thing the council should be doing more of as well is investing in our own land. You know, we're a bit too reliant on AHBs and contractors to come to us. And I understand that, you know, we'll take whatever we can get to, but at the same time, we should be getting our own land, building our own houses.
There is also a fund, though, isn't there, from government for the purchase of second-hand properties, you know, existing housing stock. And it's quite a big fund, but your figures seem to indicate Donegal got one of the lowest allocations. What's that about?
Yeah, so the Social Housing Acquisition Fund, so it's $325 million, has been allocated this year. So it's a kind of change in the system before. It didn't really go on monetary value. It went on the number of houses. And so now we've seen that this year we will get $2 million, which is the lowest. And a few counties have gotten that, like Leitrim, Roscommon, other counties as well. But it's just, it's really hard to kind of believe that we only got $2 million.
Well, is that sorry to cut across you because sometimes it can be about how much you apply for rather than how much you're allocated. So was this a case that we aren't, as a local authority, submitting enough sort of applications, or is that the money that's given to us to do with what we will, I wonder?
No, I would say it is money just given to us, because last year we had 10 that we were allowed to buy, and then by the end of the year we also had 9 tenants in situ situations that we didn't actually end up buying, so that would have been 19 in total. So, you know, there is the demand out there, especially with the tenants in situ, so that's the kind of scheme. Whereas if you are getting, say, half, or you're on the house waiting list and you're privately renting and your landlord sells, council can buy that house and then they can rent to you, which saves a lot of people from homelessness, you know.
All right, listen, Dakota, the line's not fantastic, but thank you. The point is made. Councillor Dakota, Nick Venman there. Why does Declan Meehan hold his counter-protest at another time in a different place? He's only inviting confrontation, and I'm sick of listening to this far-right name-calling. I'm sick of our hard-earned tax money being dished out at the expense of neglected services for our own people and country. I'm all for sharing and caring, but the purse will empty. Now, Declan Meehan's not organising it, as far as I'm aware. He's just part of it and happened to be the person that came on yesterday to talk about it. Another caller says, I'm right with Declan Meehan. Whatever the organisers of the rally claim, you can be sure it's 100% supported by every bigot in Donegal. Thankfully, I believe them to be a small minority. Claims of illegal immigrants, correct term is undocumented, causing a rise in crime, taking social housing from Irish nationals, are simply not true. Not supported by Garda statistics, the real rise in crime in Ireland, particularly in Dublin, is against migrants, against people of colour, against LGBTQ people. In Donegal, there are many crimes committed, often behind closed doors, by, as the court records show, a majority proportionately of Irish men. Women within the immigrant community are particularly vulnerable. The term inverted is an imported trope from MAGA supporters in the US. Greg, what planet is he living on? What is he doing to help Irish people? Another, what's wrong with that man? He talks crap. We're fed up with what's going on in the country. Foreign nationals getting everything and causing trouble. Ukraine is 4 times the size of Ireland. Let people go there. This is a joke. Hi, Greg. Declan Meehan is absolutely correct. The organisers of this anti-immigrant march are not interested in the real issues of healthcare, housing and the defective blocks crisis. Hi, Greg. Last year, 3 members of the US Congress used the old cat kill, kill them all, referring to murdering 2.4 million Palestinians, and a 4th member of Congress called for a Hiroshima moment, and Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael remained silent, yet were completely indignant. Regarding kneecaps outburst, which they've apologised for, the sickening hypocrisy from our politicians just to score political points over Irish Republicans is laid bare. Now, you know, they talk about free speech and freedom of expression, and of course that doesn't mean you can use certain types of language, but kneecap, they are the knives are out for them. They've already lost 1 gig in Britain in the summer. They were due to play Glastonbury, and I will eat my hat if they do play Glastonbury. So it's clear that you know, those who probably actually those who are supportive of Israel will do all they can to ensure kneecap's career in Britain at least is done away with. In response to someone's post about anti-immigration protest, it's not about migrant workers who are here legally and honestly. It's against the orchestrated continual flow of undocumented single males who, according to the government, have fled war. If this is so, where are the women and children? It's all about protecting our culture and morals. I mean, there are IPAS centres around the place and in Letterkenny where it is predominantly families. But I mean, obviously, people have these concerns. And I suppose, too, given that list that I had compiled for you a little earlier on, you know, I mean, why is there so much business interest in locating people all over the country and not least here in Donegal? Mr. Meehan, causing division. People are entitled to protest. It's a protest against the mass immigration, which country can't cope with. Over 15,000 homeless, new record levels. That's the real issue. It's not racism, as Meehan is trying to portray. Good Irish people as awful labelling by him today. That was yesterday. Very difficult to listen to. But we have to listen to each other, right? That's the thing. And obviously, you know, if you're the presenter, you're going to be a lightning rod, because different people are going to say, well, why is he on, or what's she saying? But I feel it's important that we listen to each other, even if sometimes we don't like what the other person says. If Councillor Meehan acknowledges that people have fear in their local community and the possibility of another IPAS, 5 IPAS centres going into Letterkenny, as mentioned on your show, They wish to protest peacefully to the government on the issues. Why is he thinking it's a good idea to encourage a counter-protest? And another, there'll be always be a few bad eggs that try to corrupt a protest. However, we know from other protests in Dublin, other countries, that the opposition use their agents to infiltrate the crowd and cause trouble. I never really bought that, but, and I've seen that in left and right protests where there's been some misbehaving within the public. And I think sometimes you're far better off to own that than to try and go down the route that there are agents of those that oppose you politically. I just think it's far more likely that there are those that feel more passionately, and that passion can overstep a line. And I think you're just best to own that and say, look, I think it's you say that because you don't want to be criticising people in your own political movement, but maybe sometimes it might be better to do so. Right, on the show now, Emma O'Neill, founder of No Hair, Who Cares? Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you keeping?
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on the show. Great, in fact. Right, now, you have had alopecia since you were 11 years of age. It must have been a tough one for you as such a young person.
Yeah, definitely. So I suppose that's 22 years ago now. And if we think back then, really, when I was first diagnosed, there was very little awareness or support on really what alopecia was. So both me and my parents were quite in the dark about it. I think at the age of 11 as well, you're really going into your school years. So at a time when, you know, you really want to just fit in with everybody, my hair was probably at its worst. Found my first patch at 11. And by the time of 14, I had lost most of the hair at the back of my head and the side of my head. So, yeah, it really, really was a tough and dark time. And for me, I just felt really alone and isolated. I didn't know anybody else like me. So that's really why I've started No Hair, Who Cares, to try and help people, either whether it be their parents or, you know, a young person going through this, to know that they're really not alone.
Yeah, because I'm sure it would have been very useful for your family when you were 11 years of age, to have a resource where they could go and go, right, what's happening? What are the options? Or ask any questions, or just talk to someone who understands.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that we're doing, I've contacted some of the schools, is to get our posters out in schools. You know, for me, if I had have seen something that just showed me that I'm not alone and there is other people going through the same thing, would have been a massive help. And for my parents, you know, they were really, really supportive, and, you know, they always said everything's going to be okay, but they really didn't know whether or not that was true, because they didn't really know what it was. Even today, you know, the research, well, there is research, and, you know, there is some progress from a medical point of view. Like, this is a lifelong condition for people. It treats people completely differently. Some people's hair might grow back, some people won't. So for us, just having a platform where people can go to for research, information, support, hearing other people's journeys. I'm working with some salons to get a directory live. We're building a website, so there'll be a directory of salons throughout Donegal and Northwest, you know, that are there kind of as allies to people with alopecia or hair loss.
And what role can they play? Would it be styling, maybe, you know, if someone wanted a wig, for an example, or is it maybe a comfortable place whereby if you have lost some of your hair, you can talk about a hairstyle, maybe to, you know, conceal if that's what you wanted to do, or maybe a different cut that might, you know, show it in a different way. Is that the kind of role do you think the hairdressing industry has?
Yeah, I really see, like, hairdressers as allies to, you know, not just alopecia, hair loss in general. There is a grant now for wig and hairpiece support, and there is certain hair salons that are registered with the HSE, so you can go to them and they can help you with a hairpiece or a wig, whatever it may be, and then help you get the funding. But outside of that, it's, you know, I used to dread having to go to the hairdressers. I still very rarely go, but even just offering a place where, you know, whether it's quieter hours, a private room, having people to be able to, you know, go talk through their options with, you know, in terms of their hairstyle, is massive. I was really lucky growing up. My hairdresser came to the house. She would come and cut my hair because I was petrified of the hairdressers. Locally, there is Head Rush in LK. They offer a private room, and also Glamour in Buncrana do the same.
Fair play.
So having salons that will do that is like a massive support for us.
And is there a crossover to, you know, maybe people who have hair loss through alopecia and maybe those who have lost hair due to cancer treatment, an ongoing cancer treatment, because someone can be without hair for quite some time potentially?
Yeah, and look, my story is obviously alopecia, but hair loss in general can just be emotionally devastating. You know, it doesn't matter how it happens. Some people will get alopecia off of the back of trauma. So whether that can be, you know, from a medical condition, it could just be that they're born with it or they get it through their life. But just hair loss in general is, it really, really impacts people. I don't think there's enough awareness on just the mental impact it can have on people, and how, you know, I've heard some stories since we've started our survey, you know, people not leaving their houses because their confidence is really, really impacted in their mental health. So I think while ours is looking at the alopecia journey, it's just for those with hair loss in general.
And it's so personal too. You can't just wish people out of that feeling. Is it uniquely for women too? I shaved my hair off in my early 20s. It was obvious that where things were going, it never really bothered me. So whenever I'm talking about something like this, I come from a position of like, well, it was, I felt my life improved, right? But I also know for a lot of men, it's a really big issue too. But male pattern baldness can be expected to a great extent as well, but still it causes anxiety. Are you working with men through this group, or is it sort of specifically women? I mean, obviously, a lot of these grants are you know, sex specific, but what's the situation there?
No, so this is open to everybody. I have had a woman contact me. Her son has alopecia. He screams with fear every time someone comes to the door because he doesn't want anyone to see them. So, you know, it's not, alopecia doesn't pick a gender.
And of course, it's alopecia is beyond sort of head hair loss as well, to eyebrows or whatever can also be affected too, which is a step ahead of sort of male pattern baldness, isn't it?
Yeah, so really what we're looking for is for people to kind of, you know, join the initiatives, share their stories, that male, female, whether it's, you know, parents or anybody supporting their loved ones through this, to be part of it so we can help each other through it and build up that community.
Yeah, and I think it's clear from your phraseology that you want this service to reflect what people want, and you're not presuming what people want, even though you've got your own experience. It's like email info at nohairwhocares.ie, and we can grow this into what it needs to be. Am I framing it correctly?
Yeah, exactly. The research survey that's out, you can email us on that email address. We also have the survey on our Instagram, which is No Hair Who Cares at Northwest, and then also on Facebook, which is No Hair Who Cares. For me, I would have just liked to have a community out there. I would have liked to have somewhere I can go to get information. We are building a website, and what I want is people to fill out our survey, tell us what they need, what they would like to see, and that's how we will shape No Hair Who Cares going forward. It's really based on what services people need and want to see.
The alopecia is a strange one, isn't it, in the medical field, in that we don't really know what causes it. Like, it's an autoimmune issue, but as you say, there are different triggers or no triggers. I mean, as someone with alopecia, does that bother you that you don't know why did this happen?
Yeah, I find it really hard to know why I am losing my hair. Like, I suppose when people look at me, I probably look like a fraud because I have a massive head of hair, but it's all extensions. So I'm really lucky that mine's has fallen out of the back of my head and I can cover it with extensions, but not everybody can. And it's that of the medicine and research hasn't caught up. So I'm kind of at my point of acceptance, but, and I want to help people to be at that point where, you know, like, we don't know why we have it. There is, well, there's research, there's no treatment that'll fit all. And, you know, with any type of medicine comes with side effects. So I think a real shine needs to be put on how we support people just getting through life and hoping that one day the medicine and research will catch up.
Yeah, indeed. And I think, I think, you know, your situation is quite insightful for people who are in a similar situation to you. And then there are others with total hair loss and they might be able to relate to. So it is, you know, everyone's relevant in this, in this spectrum, I think, and you particularly. Emma, listen, the very best of luck. I think it's amazing that you're creating and have created something that you can, you wish that was there for you and it wasn't. So in other words, others coming through will have those supports and be part of a community, which is so critical. If you want to take part in this survey, where is the survey actually available? And I know where we email it to. Are you just asking people to freestyle it, like to vibe it, what they want in it, or is there a form or what?
No, so there is a form. You can find it on our bio and our Instagram page, which is No Hair Who Cares Northwest, and on our Facebook, which is No Hair Who Cares. It's also on my personal Facebook, which is Emma O'Neill. But also people are quite happy to freestyle it if they want and send us an email at info@nohairwhocares.ie.
All right, we'll get that link shared on our socials as well. Thanks so much, Emma. That's Emma O'Neill there. That is the 9 till noon show as its first hour. We'll be back after the news at 10. Stay right where you are.